TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Ralph Nader, Corporate Power in America. This year, Ralph Nader, founder of Public Citizen, really is running for president on the Green Party ticket. You are about to hear a fact-filled, programmatic speech with an in-depth analysis of corporate power in America and detailed suggestions for political action. The speech was held in San Francisco in March of 2000. Nader begins by rewriting the biannual report on the U.S. economy by Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan, introducing a different set of economic indicators. Here is Ralph Nader.
You know Chairman Alan Greenspan? He's the chairman of the Federal Reserve. And every 6 months, he goes up to Congress and he has detailed testimony in somber tones about the state of the economy. And he usually starts out this way: Mr. Chairman and distinguished members of the House Banking Committee, thank you for your invitation for my testimony on the state of the economy. According to the available indicators to me at my disposal, I must say, in summary fashion, before I elaborate, that the state of the economy is splendid. That it could scarcely be better. We have a restrained inflation, a declining unemployment rate. We have restraint on wages. We have growing corporate profits, substantial capital accumulation, a very robust and exuberant stock market, and a growing GDP every quarter. Those are their yardsticks. Let's look at our yardsticks. Let's look at the people's yardsticks about the economy. And let's rewrite. Let's rewrite his testimony for a few minutes. Let's assume I ghost wrote Alan Greenspan's testimony. Here we go. Mr. Chairman and distinguished members of the committee of the House Banking Committee, I am here to discuss the state of our economy. Recently, other available indicators have come to my attention. I have analyzed them, digested them, absorbed them, and now want to share my thoughts. But first, my regrets. I would like you to consider my previous testimony over the last 3 years that was based on another set of indicators. I would like you to consider that those testimonies inoperative. The state of the economy is not good. There are growing profits in the corporate world. The gross national product is increasing. The stock market keeps going up. But on the other hand, the recently available indicators that I've analyzed concludes the following. Despite booming corporate profits and gross national product and stock market prices, a majority of workers in this country are making less money today, adjusted for inflation, than in 1979. In California, 25% of the children are growing up in poverty. Nationwide, it's 20%. I've been advised by my consultants that that is by far the highest in the Western world. That is seven times higher than many European countries. I also note that the minimum wage today is less inflation-adjusted than it was in 1970. If it was adjusted, inflation adjusted, it would now be $7.60. I also want to note that Americans are working longer hours than they have in any recent decades per year and less time for family and community. Many full-time family farmers can no longer make a living for their families in a market of giant buyer concentration and industrial agriculture. The public works that are supposed to service the people from mass transit to drinking water systems to schools, clinics, bridges are crumbling. The corporate welfare programs are booming, paid for largely by middle-class taxpayers and amounting to hundreds of billions of dollars per year. They continue to rise with government giveaways of taxpayer assets such as new medicines developed by the taxpayer, public forests, and minerals. By the way, Mr. Chairman, just as an aside, I would recommend that you institute legislation regarding the corporate welfare kings to avoid their increasing dependency on the public dole to cut them off after 5 years. Affordable housing needs are at record levels, while secondary mortgage market companies are showing record profits. The number of Americans without health insurance grows every year. There have been 25 straight years of trade deficits, which means we're going into greater debt vis-a-vis other nations, exporting jobs, and consuming more than we're producing. The consumer debt is at an all-time high, a staggering $6.2 trillion. Personal bankruptcies are at a record level, and personal savings are dropping to such record lows, and personal assets are so low that Bill Gates' net worth is equal to the combined net worth of the poorest 120 million Americans, or 45% of the population. Mr. Chairman, I wish to let you pause for a few moments so you can share my deep concern for the deep decoupling of this economy of ours, where the top 1% of the wealthiest people have financial assets equal to the bottom 95% and have been reaping the elephant gains of this economy for themselves. Wealth inequality is greater than at any time since World War II, and despite annual declines in total business liability costs, business lobbyists are driving for more privileges and more immunities against the most innocent and harmed Americans in our midst. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Whereupon news reports report a chastened Chairman Greenspan, who immediately took a Valium pill, strode from the lectern, walked out with all his colleagues carrying briefcases to their limousines. Now, what does this tell us? It tells us that the economy has got a disconnect. It's not only a society with a democracy gap that the Green Party has to fill. That's what the issue is, the democracy gap between the oligarchies and the plutocrats and the hope and justice that a democracy can produce for us. That's why people all over the world like democracy. It's the best instrument ever devised to prevent injustices and solve deep human problems and give people opportunity to fulfill their human possibilities. It's the democracy gap that we have to go after. We have not been paying attention to the destructive effects of the concentration of power and wealth in too few hands that has taken over our government, turned it against us, or made it turn its back on us. And that combination of the corporate government taking over the political government, using money, intimidation, promises to quit the country and take the jobs with them, setting up international systems of autocratic governance called the WTO, and in many ways, attacking every basic value system with the commercial, single-minded juggernaut of profiteering that no free and just society should ever allow to reign over our democracy and to consistently push the boundaries where commercialism is supreme over basic values of justice, health, safety, the preservation of childhood, the respect for future generations, the preservation of our environment, the production of livable work rules, the development of a sustainable economy. It is not accidental that every major religion in the world has warned against the excesses of the merchant mind, the excesses of commercialism. Why? Because it possesses such unique energy, which, if channeled, can produce considerable wealth for lots of people in whatever mode it comes. But if it is not channeled, if it is not countervailed, if it is not counterchecked, if it doesn't have to compete against other models of economic development and economic justice, if it doesn't have to obey the rule of law, if it doesn't have to disclose its innermost destructive data, such as the toxicity that emits from it, if it doesn't have to behave, it can become extremely destructive and damaging. We've seen 20 years, especially after a little bit of accountability in the 60s and 70s, with the environmental laws and the consumer laws and the worker safety laws, and some semblance of some members of Congress who believe in government of, by, and for the people, instead of the General Motors, by the Exxons, for the DuPonts. The last 20 years have displayed an enormous concentration of global corporate power, pushing all the frontiers of democratic opportunities for justice. They want to restrict our rights to go to court. That's called tort reform. Restrict the rights of wrongfully injured people to have a trial by jury and to place their issues before judge and jury, subject to appellate appeal. One of the most basic rights our forebears fought for in their protest to King George III. And these insurance companies and chemical companies and auto companies and drug companies are basically saying it's not enough that they control the legislative branch. It's not enough that they control the executive branch. Now they want to control the judicial branch. And we're going to say to them, you're not going to get away with this. We're not going to let you do this. Remember, it wasn't the legislative and executive branch that brought us the civil rights decisions. It wasn't those two branches, which are highly centralized and very easily persuaded by the accumulation of campaign cash or cash register politics. And yet, we've allowed them to persuade us in their propaganda that we're a litigious people. There's no data for that. We filed more civil lawsuits in 1830 per capita than we file today. And over 90% of people who are injured by defective products or medical malpractice don't even file a claim. That's how hard it is already to use the judicial system. Just think of the functions of government to represent the interests of the people that are not performed because the government is an indentured servant to big business. People know where the power is in this country. You go anywhere in this country, and after you say your hellos and how are yous, you just ask them, who do you think runs this country? They know who runs this country. Big business runs this country. All the way down to local situations where you see the corporate welfare in its seamy worst, where crumbling school buildings and school districts that don't have enough money for books and for desks, look in the pages of the newspaper and they see there are millions of taxpayer dollars going to a stadium, an arena for a professional sports team to make more and more money. The Oakland Raiders Stadium is costing, in addition to everything else it costs the taxpayers there, it's costing $15 million a year for a business that's open 8 days a year. 8 days a year. Can you imagine such a windfall? 8 games a year. And look at the schools. Look at the public transit deprivation. Look at the clinics. Doesn't that make you a bit upset? Huh? Doesn't that broaden the frame of reference? Doesn't that extend your resolve? in one area after another in our economy, in the areas where these corporations, these electronic child molesters, are exploiting our two-year-olds, four-year-olds, eight-year-olds, selling them junk food, putting violent and addictive ideas and images in their minds through this entertainment hucksterism, putting more military toys in five-year-old boys' hands, teaching pre-teenagers how to interact in TV and strip out people's hearts and brains in the mayhem that they want them to engage in, over-medicating them, more Ritalin, more drugs. Oh, gee, they seem to be misbehaving. Pump the drugs into them. Make the schools the funnels for the drugs. Give them out free samples. We've got to put a stop to this. And then come the addictive industries. The tobacco industry, now revealed to its utter disgrace and shame, that it has been pursuing for decades a marketing practice of trying to hook 11, 12, 11, 13, 14-year-old kids to a lifetime of smoking, one out of every three of whom would die from a smoking-related disease. This is something to just say, well, it's whatever the market can bear, it's free enterprise. 9 out of every 10 adults are hooked on tobacco began when they were children and early teenagers. And we're just waking up to it. And you know why? Because some people brought lawsuits in a court of law. The tort system that began blowing open the internal memos that got to 60 Minutes and the whistleblowers of conscience that were portrayed in movies recently. That's why. That's why one Democratic lever opens up horizons of correction, horizons of preventing, in this case, the massive violence that this tobacco industry, these drug dealers, whose executives have been invited for years to the White House and to governor's mansions, have inflicted on millions of Americans. More people died in 1999 from tobacco-related diseases in this country than all the Americans who died in World War II. Now, how about the coal industry? Apart from its contribution to global warming and to strip mining and to acidic runoffs and to pummeling those poor towns and hollows in Appalachia and Kentucky, the number of coal miners who have died since 1890 from black lung disease, coal miners' pneumoconiosis, that was documented decades ago in Britain, and from collapses and reckless construction of coal mines, the number of coal miners who have died exceeds the number of Americans who were killed in World War II. The number of women who were mutilated by the Delcon Shield worldwide, hundreds of thousands, known to its manufacturer in Virginia and to its insurer in Hartford, Connecticut, before the products were taken off the market. The numbers of people who were killed in auto crashes because there were no seatbelts when seatbelts were invented generations ago. Because there were no padded dash panels, which were known in the early Roman chariot days. Because of simple devices like collapsible steering columns instead of the steering columns that were used as spears in right front collisions and killed 250,000 Americans in otherwise preventable injury crashes from the year 1900 to 1966. And 100,000 people every year who medical journals have shown died because of the misprescription or overprescription of pharmaceuticals because of reckless prescribers and recklessly promoting drug companies. The 100,000 Americans who died from occupationally related diseases every year. The 80,000 people who die from medical malpractice just in hospitals, according to the Harvard School of Public Health study, physicians who have no axe to grind. 80,000 every year from recklessness, medical malpractice. That is more than the number of deaths from homicides, motor vehicle crashes, and fire the United States. And that doesn't even include emergency room neglect, or clinics, or doctor's offices, or side effects of drugs. We're not talking here about a few cheats, about a few fingers on the scale. We're talking here about our growing up so corporate that when the words crime, violence, welfare, and regulation are uttered, most of us don't think that corporations are responsible far more of those categories than people outside these corporations. The corporate crimes in industry after industry, billions of dollars. How about bailing out the savings and loan crooks? That's $500 billion from 1990 to the year 2020. $500 billion. And how about all the financial crimes we've been reading about? Metropolitan Life, Prudential. There was an outfit here in Southern California that forged $250 million in phony life insurance policies. What about them? How many of these corporate criminals end up in our criminal justice system? How many of them go to jail for price fixing, for violating pollution laws, for knowingly selling defective products, for exploiting the poor with the horrendous loan sharking? And they're not just individuals. These are big companies with subsidiaries who engage in home equity frauds and payday loans and landlord abuse. And then they turn around and they demand privileges and immunities. They demand exemption from taxes. They demand exemption from accountabilities for their wrongful injuries. They demand all kinds of immunities and privileges because they are corporations, you see? They are artificial entities. But they also want to be persons. And they also want to have all the constitutional rights that real people have, even though they're artificial entities. And you can't have equal justice under law, under that system. You cannot have equal justice for yourself and General Motors under that system, where they have all kinds of privileges and immunities you cannot possibly have, and all the constitutional rights that you think you have. For example, you can't really escape taxation by finding some tax haven overseas and turning it into a legal deduction. Corporations do that all the time. You can't go into bankruptcy and still pay yourself full dollar and keep many of your assets, get rid of your creditors or your other claimants. You can't be in 200 places at once around the world pitting one country against another. You can't be basically controlling governments the way these corporations do. We have to really seriously think about whether we want corporations to be treated as persons under our Constitution, or whether we have to have a different standard for these artificial entities in order to make them much more accountable and to condition their very existence on corporate charters that are given by the states with conditions, with stipulations, the way they were 180 years ago when the first corporate charters were tendered. One thing about growing up corporate, and most of us have grown up corporate, it's easy to test it. You want to test someone, see if they grow up corporate? Just ask them several questions. What do they do when they look at television and they don't like the programs? And they'll say, I turn it off, or I switch the channel. You say, what else? You say, what else is there to do? That's growing up corporate. Growing up civic means you say, that's my public airways that you are misusing. And we want our own audience network. We want our own cable channels. We want to participate in this property of ours that we have leased to you free. We own the public lands and they're given away. We have $4 trillion of worker pensions that the workers own, and they're invested and controlled by the large companies and the banks and insurance companies. Hey, we have all these commonwealth assets that we own together, that if we controlled what we owned, we would have enormous power over the corporate elephants that are now dominating the political economy. Because the $4 trillion alone could have enormous ownership of these companies. And the owners can control these companies. This is one of the biggest capital pools in the world, if not the biggest, the pension funds. And we've got to begin thinking about a political agenda that controls what we own. That's an extremely powerful message. Even right-wingers will like that message when you say, do you think you should control what you own? Yeah. You think I ever thought I'd be a candidate for public office? I never dreamed of it. But when you're closed out, you got to harken back to Jefferson's warning. There's got to be a dramatic change in the political arena to facilitate the political and civic energies of the American people as an affirmative duty of a constitutional government to facilitate the political and civic energies of the people with their own media and their own ability to band together in civic institutions of power that define freedom and justice in America. I want you to think about how you can multiply your efforts and metabolize your efforts in all kinds of directions, making calls to talk radio, writing letters to the editor for startups, petitioning, passing out leaflets, generating debates, discussions around the water cooler at work, or whatever. It all begins to add up. And in adding up, we'll see that a year from now, 2 years from now, the doubters, the ridiculers of small political starts will swallow their words. Go, we go. Thank you.
That was Ralph Nader, presidential candidate for the Green Party, recorded at Horace Mann High School in San Francisco in March of 2000. This was a carefully edited half-hour version of a speech that also contained more examples and detailed suggestions for strategies of political work. You can get an audio tape of the full one-hour speech by Ralph Nader for $12. A transcript is $8. Both tape and transcript are $16. Send your check to TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141, USA. That's $12 for the audio tape by Ralph Nader, $8 for the transcript, or $16 for both audio tape and transcript. Send your check to TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141, USA. TUC Radio's website is www.tucradio.org. For a credit card order, call TUC Radio toll-free at 1-877-TUC-TAPE. That's 877-TUC-TAPE. The music is by G.S. Sarstef. My name is Mariah Gallardin. Thank you for listening.